If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
But to me, to just have that 1 hour to just kind of trade, not war stories, but just, hey, here's at a very low level, like here's how we're handling that problem. And that's helped us move our business forward, I think, a lot just over the past 24 months or so.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Sam Hales is a private equity real estate fund manager with $65 million in assets under management and founder of the Saratoga Group. Sam has 15 years of real estate and management experience in distressed asset workouts, land development, redevelopment, and lease options. He has developed and purchased office buildings, industrial buildings, multifamily buildings, and is developing a boutique hotel. But since 2017, the focus at Saratoga Group has been the purchase, revitalization, and operation of mobile home parks. Sam, welcome to the show.
Sam, thank you so much. I mean, there are not enough Sams in the world. Can we just agree on that to start off? Right.
We got two of them right here in the same show. So
there we go.
This is great, man. Hey, I appreciate you coming on. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Awesome. So I imagine my story is somewhat similar to many people. I started out in single family investment and really just my first home that my wife and I purchased, and it was an older home. We were the second people ever to own it, but it had been in the other family for like 50 years, and a lot of things. And so I'm working a tech job, and then at night we're pulling carpet and we're doing baseboards and all that stuff, and just kind of really caught the fire, so to speak. And so yeah, it started there, and then kind of slowly would do another house over here or another one over there, and then went to business school. I went to the Wharton Business School, and one of my classmates there had relationships in China. They wanted to put money in the U.S., and we put a fund together, and we started buying single-family homes in Greater Bay Area of California back in 2011, and did that for a number of years. And you know, obviously, that was a big shot in the arm kind of to get going on the whole fund concept. And then moved to mobile home parks in 2017, and been all in on that asset class, and no looking back at this point.
Wow. That's fascinating. Most of the time you don't hear, you know, hey, we had a large equity injection from out of country investors to start our first fund. I mean, up until that point, you'd just kind of been doing onesie twosie purchases of single family homes. So yeah. How did you convince the out of country or the Chinese investors that you were the guys to put a bunch of money with?
You know, really, and this is certainly something I've learned, it's relationships, right? And it wasn't my relationship was with my classmate and partner. He had the relationships in China. They had done business for 10, 15 years mm-hmm. together in many different fields. And so that part, I don't want to underplay it for him, but it looked pretty easy. You know what I mean? It was a few dinners and a quick trip to China and a couple other things. And all of a sudden we had a fund.
Right. That's really cool. Do you currently, when you guys are buying mobile home parks now, is it still through a fund or is it just single asset purchases?
So we've done some of both. We initially were doing, again, because when we jumped in, we were new in this asset class, right? And so initially we were just buying one at a time or maybe three at a time that we'd kind of group together or whatever. Really over the last year and a half or so, it's all been in a fund structure. Mm. And there's a couple reasons for that. One of them is, a big part of our business is buying mobile home parks in opportunity zones. Mm. And so for an opportunity zone investor, they've got some kind of timing requirements that they have to meet. And they actually have to do it in a fund structure. They can't do individual assets. It has to be in a fund. So that's where we started going down that path as we saw what the market needed and we kind of responded to that. And then as we started doing that, it's like, you know what, it's actually a lot easier to do in a fund structure because then you have the capital ready to go make those acquisitions. And we felt pretty confident on our pipeline. So we now have an opportunity zone fund and then just kind of a standard fund. But it's all mobile home parks.
Right. Man, that's super cool. So you guys are going all mobile home parks. What have been some of the surprises, either good or bad, that you guys have experienced either on the growth of the fund side or really of the owning and operating mobile home parks?
Boy, owning and operating mobile home parks is the surprises are hard to capture. I mean, they're like, there's a new surprise every day, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I feel like already we could write a book. I mean, there's been situations, and we buy turnaround properties. So I'm not going to go into the stories, but there's been the FBI. There's been certainly a lot of police intervention, and we, you know, we buy communities and we want to make them safe for families. And so sometimes, and we love communities that are in more urban areas, right? Where there's tons of job opportunity around, but sometimes those communities are tough, and there's a lot of things that we have to deal with to kind of, first of all, make them safe. I mean, we end up on a typical acquisition, our occupancy 6 months later is lower than when we bought it.
Wow.
Because we're actually moving some people out, because until we get those folks out that, you know, really don't belong and are, you know, maybe there's criminal behavior or whatever, we can't get in the people we want until the wrong people are gone. If that makes sense. So, So yeah, there's been some surprises there. On the other side of it, it's been mind-boggling to me. Like, think of any other commercial real estate where you can buy the asset and the rents are half of what they should be. And to me, that is our average acquisition. All the time we're buying them, the lot rent is $200 a month and it should be $400. Make those changes overnight, but it's kind of nice to be able to put that in your pro forma. Right. I mean, you think about, but what it comes down to is it's like, well, it's not, you don't necessarily think about it being half of market. You think about it as, well, it's $200 under market. And, right. And there's reasons for that. Like, it needs capital investment. It needs these other things. But when you say it that way, it's like, well, okay, yeah, you could do that in the multifamily space or the office space or whatever. But on a percentage basis, it's real money for a mobile home park, because you're more than doubling your NOI, but you're doubling your gross revenues.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those are always fun things to see. What's a typical turnaround time? Like, do you guys project each park individually and say, okay, it's going to take us 18 months to get this thing turned around, or 2 years? Or do you, I mean, how does that work out?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is specific to each community. So I'll give you a couple examples. We're in escrow on a property in Amarillo, Texas, and it's 126 pads. It's half occupied, but the other pads that are not occupied have homes on them. All of those homes, except for maybe 10, are, they need carpet, they need paint, they need little dry rot repair. Other than that, like, we can get those occupied, and there's tons of demand. It's in Amarillo, Texas. There's tons of demand in the market. So you look at the turnaround on that, and it's pretty quick. It probably is 18 months or so. But another acquisition that we had recently is actually in your neck of the woods, Millington, Tennessee. They're in Memphis. Okay. We bought 219 spaces in Millington, great submarket. And it's also half full, except the lots that don't have occupants, they don't have homes either. So we've got to bring in over 100 homes to that community. That is difficult. Like, right now, I mean, we know about the shortages in lumber and, you know, all the construction backlog and pricing and all. And so to get those homes in, I mean, we bought it in November and we don't have a home yet, right? I mean, we put the orders in right away, but I mean, there's a 9-month lag from the factory. We actually have our first home showing up in July, and then we'll kind of steadily get those. But it'll take us, you know, that project's more like 3.5 years. So totally depends on kind of the character. And we've got another one in Rockford, Illinois. It's almost 400 sites and only 130 were filled when we bought it. So, right. I mean, we're talking over 250 homes that we have to move into that community. That's going to take 7 years. I mean, it's going to take a while.
How do you go into these buys on something like that? And what'd you say? That was basically a third full.
Yeah, third full.
How do you go into that with the confidence that we can turn this around?
Yeah, it's definitely a couple things, right? I mean, it is a submarket. I mean, you have something like that, you've got to be confident that if you bring homes in there, there's a buyer or there's a renter or there's, right, someone that wants to live there, because that's a ton of infill. Now, we also look at, you know, what is the NOI on the going in? Right. And for example, that community, we bought it at a 6 cap. I mean, in today's market, buying it at a 6 cap. But again, that's at a third occupancy where you've got all these costs. They're amortized over only a third of those lots. So as you look at that, like, that was part of a portfolio buy, but basically about $5.5 to $6 million was allocated to that purchase out of portfolio, filled up. Those lot rents are at almost $500 a month, filled up. I mean, the community's worth over $20 million.
Right.
So, but yeah, you've got to be comfortable, get comfortable with the submarket. And what I'll say about that is, if I was in multifamily, right, if I was doing apartment buildings, I would be in Nashville, Tennessee. I wouldn't be in Memphis.
Sure.
I mean, Memphis is okay, right? But I mean, I'd be in Raleigh, North Carolina, not Greenville, North Carolina.
Right.
But in the mobile home park space, those other tertiary markets are really good markets. Just because there's not very much supply of manufactured housing communities. And what we found is in any decent market where, you know, three bedroom rents are at least $1,000 and, you know, a couple other things that we're looking at, there is unlimited demand. There's fixed supply because you can't build a new one. It's almost anywhere you go, it's impossible to build a new one. So you've got fixed supply and lots of demand, really increasing demand. So we get really comfortable with markets where, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to do a ground up multifamily project in Greenville, North Carolina. I mean, it's a decent market, but too much risk in my mind. But manufactured housing, yeah, all day long.
You mentioned earlier that you guys are bringing 100 homes into a project. You guys, and forgive me, I don't remember which state that was. And we talked about a lot of states here, but you're bringing 100 homes in. What are you, what's your disposition strategy of those homes? I mean, are you guys owning the homes and then renting them? Are you doing owner finance? What's that look like?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. There's kind of three main alternatives that you have, and you pretty much covered all of them right there. So one of them is just renting them out. Second would be some sort of seller finance or maybe like a rent credit or lease option program. And then the third would be to actually get a loan from the bank. So what we found that's worked the best for us is we want owners, not renters. Makes for a better community. These homes, you know, over time definitely do depreciate. We want somebody that's going to care for it like it's their own, and it is their own. But we also find that not a lot of people qualify for the bank financing.
Right.
It's affordable housing. If they don't move into our community, then they're probably renting an apartment somewhere. Mm. We feel like we can offer a much better quality of life for a lower price, but that's kind of the alternative. So anyway, we basically do, and it's state specific because there's different laws for different states, but it's basically like a lease option or a contract for deed. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, because that was going to be my question, because, you know, most of the people I know in the mobile home park industry, they want to be lot rent. That's what they want to collect. They don't necessarily want to be landlord. So yeah, I was just curious how that's working out. But you guys have found the good strategy is to then just go ahead and fill the entire place with homes. You'll take it's 100 homes short, you put 100 homes in there and then sell those off. How do you go about, like, do you have somebody on the ground that's then taking those and doing showings and leasing them or selling them, or how does that work out?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, but first of all, I should say, like I mentioned, it's hard to get homes right now, but what that means is we're not going to get a shipment for 100 homes in a month. So for right now, for example, we're getting homes out of Clayton's plant in Wakarusa, Indiana. I mean, that's one of the plants, but that's a main source of homes for us right now. They're shipping 4 homes per week, right? So, and those go into our portfolio. We've got 4,000 pads. We have at this point about 1,500 open pads, right? So we're kind of steering the homes to where there's the most demand, and there's, you know, we're ready with those homes to set them, and we're already have some velocity with moving homes. And then, yeah, we've got to have somebody on the ground, right? So we've got somebody on the ground that's, first of all, making sure the homes get set right, making sure all the utilities get turned on, that the porches get installed, that the skirting gets, I mean, you know, they're just kind of all these steps you have to do, and then getting the certificate of occupancy, and then moving, right? So we kind of have timelines of, hey, this is how long a company metric, this is how long for the setup, this is how long for the sale. And then we use, what we found is 90 some percent, you know, I'm going to call it 95. I mean, it's virtually all of the online leads that we receive come through Facebook Marketplace. And so that's where our client is. That's where we spend our money advertising. And we certainly get a lot of kind of word of mouth referral from current residents and that sort of thing. But in terms of finding new buyers, it's all about Facebook Marketplace.
That's interesting. I want to unpack some stats here. So you guys roughly have, you said 4,000 pads. Is that about right? You have about 1,500 that are currently vacant, right?
Yeah.
And so you're getting four homes a week, which takes you to 208 a year. So you're still at 7 years before you could fill every one of those pads. I know you said earlier that you buy it, and I'm sorry if I'm getting nerding out. Maybe we need a spreadsheet for this question more than
anything. No problem.
But at what point do you, I guess if you're buying it a six cap, when you get to my question eventually, I'm sure I'll land this plane. But I guess if you're buying it a six cap and it's already making money, who cares if there's vacant pads? I guess is that the answer to the question? So you can always continue to buy, because if you do add a home to it, that's just padding the bottom line, basically. Is that basically the thought there? Is that even if you had 10,000 pads and, you know, 2,500 of them are vacant, you're still making money? It's not the end of the world.
I mean, yeah, in a nutshell, that's it. I mean, you know, the other side of that is I just kind of mentioned one plant, right, out of Wakarusa, but we're buying from other plants and other vendors. So our total take on homes is going to be, you know, quite a bit higher than the four per week that I mentioned. But no, absolutely. I mean, it takes, like I said, some of these big communities, especially, I mean, it takes time to sell. Right. So even if we're able to ship 100 to this community in Rockford, Illinois, that has all these vacancies, I don't want to get all those set up and then sitting there as vacant inventory. Right. I mean, it's nice to be able to kind of time it. And then you see the velocity and you're like, okay, well, let's start diverting more there. Maybe we do less there and we do more over here. And we can kind of respond to those dynamics with the shipments that we have coming out of the factories.
That's interesting. You don't hear many thoughts on, you know, that where you say, hey, you know what, the kind of trickle of homes is actually better, or the trickle of supply is actually better for your guys' business, because then you're not overwhelmed with a bunch of empty or a bunch of vacant stock.
Yeah. Going, gosh, what do we do? Right. I mean, exactly. Like you think about, because in a sense, it's like you look at our portfolio, like what the heck's wrong with mobile home parks? They're half full. Right. Or whatever. And it's like, right. Cause that doesn't happen. I mean, if you've got an apartment building that's half full, you're like, oh crap, man. Like, do you need to like raise that thing and like build something else? Like what's going on there?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But in mobile home parks, it's like, no, it's simple. There's tons of demand. You just have to bring in new homes. Like people don't really rent just the lots. I mean, that'll happen once in a blue moon. Somebody wants to move a home into your park or whatever. But that's not generally going to happen. Like to fill up your community, you got to bring in the homes.
Right, right. What's the average price? I just don't know the answer to this question. And I'm just asking random questions because you're things I'm curious about. What's the average price of a home that you put in that you guys have to buy?
The average price 12 months ago was about $32,000. The average price now is creeping up to $45,000.
Wow.
And that's for the exact same house.
Holy smokes. You've had a more than 33% increase in cost. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. And then what do you do on the resale side, the resale side of things? I mean, do you guys then mark up that price and then of course charge interest plus, I mean, when you're doing lease options, I guess that's the way you have to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? So as significant as that sounds, because it is in a percentage basis,
right?
But I'm trying to remember the stat now that I saw it with regards to what the increase has been to a stick built single family home, but it's a multiple of the $12,000 I just told you for a manufactured home. So what's happening? It's like, okay, there's inflation and it's happening everywhere. And for us, basically what we do is like, we don't change how much money they have to come up with to get in. What changes is their monthly payment.
Sure.
And you know, it's going to go up $75 to $100 or whatever, but it's still so affordable relative to comparable or alternative housing, you know, between three bedroom apartments or whatever else you want to look at, certainly in terms of stick built single family purchases. I mean, it's just so much more reasonable.
So much more reasonable. Your cost to get in are so much lower. I mean, there's a lot of things going for the mobile home park space. And especially if you're a good operator that's running a decent, clean community versus that's kind of critical. What I think mobile homes have really taken on a new dimension over what maybe they were, say, 30 years ago.
Oh yeah.
That's especially the more it gets institutionalized, as more companies like you get involved in the space, the higher the level of quality assets that are out there. So
for
that's
sure.
Fantastic. Sam, I've super enjoyed this. This has been fun to learn about your business, what you guys have done. You've got a lot more here in your bio that I wanted to unpack, but we didn't even have time for any of all that. So anyway, it was fun just talking about mobile home parks. Always a good conversation. The last four questions are this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
If I were a new investor wanting to get into the space, I would find a niche that nobody else wants to do. And then just real quickly on that. So in my space, in mobile home parks, that means go buy a small community with a bunch of park-owned homes. As you know, Sam, nobody wants to do that, but there's actually And we actually do that all the time. I mean, in terms of buying the park-owned homes, because you can turn that into additional cash flow. It's way more work. But that's a way for somebody to do something different that people will tell you, hey, don't do that. But today, with such a competitive market, if I was a new investor, I would do something like that.
Mm, that's awesome. That's awesome. I love that. Question number two is this. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
So we talk about this all the time in the company, but we believe in the abundance mentality, meaning, hey, we think we figured out a few things, but we know we haven't figured out everything. And there's other operators, especially in our space, that we love to just, we'll get on conference calls and be like, hey, what's happening for you guys? Like, what roadblocks are you having? Here's the problems we're having. And we just kind of share learnings that we have in the space. That has been some of the most, and I enjoy reading books and podcasts and all the rest, but to me, to just have that 1 hour to just kind of trade, not war stories, but just, hey, here's at a very low level, like here's how we're handling that problem. And that's helped us move our business forward, I think, a lot just over the past 24 months or so.
Wow. That's super cool. That's brilliant. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Yeah. Because they're going to come up with ideas that you don't have. I mean, there's a lot of industry groups like that on Facebook and things like that, but to get that in a conference call with people that you know and trust is invaluable. That's awesome. Question number three is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
So another thing we talk about, Saratoga Group, we call it the bus test. And growing up, going to middle school, I grew up in Iowa. Getting on the bus as a seventh grader, actually, even as a sixth grader, that's where it started. It's like, that was stressful, man. It was like, you're getting on there, you're the young kid on the bus, and you didn't want to do anything to look different or to seem different. And so if you lived in a house or in a community that was embarrassing, that was a hard thing as a kid. So for us, the bus test is, if the bus stops in front of our community and drops kids off, right, and they feel ashamed to be there, we failed. What we want is, we want the kid to get dropped off from the bus and be proud of where they live and proud of the character of the community. And I feel like that's really the thing about giving back. Like, that's, yes, it's about the economics and investor, but if we can do that, like, we're making the world a better place.
100%, 100%. No, you said it. I love that. The bus test. I've not heard that before, but that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. Sam, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
So probably on LinkedIn, Sam Hales at Saratoga Group, and then email is sam@saratogagroup.com.
Awesome. Sam, I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.